wanna smile at me. These rap cats, man, they all got this style for me. And if I ever see them, man, they probably bow to me.
What's good, y'all? Welcome to the Cannon and Watt podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'm Cannon, always joined here by my co-host Wop. Wop, it's been a minute, man. How you feeling? What's going on?
Man, I'm feeling great. I'm feeling happy to be back recording again and talking about the NBA again as we get ready to start the new season. And, you know, there's a lot of possibilities this year, which we'll talk about, but I'm excited, overall excited.
Absolutely, man. It's definitely, you know, we've been on a small hiatus here, but ready to get things right back into gear as we gear up for the 2020-2021 season. And you mentioned there's a lot of possibilities, man. We just we just drafted our fantasy basketball teams on Thursday. I'm in complete love with my team, you know, but how you feeling about yours, man?
Oh, man, I'm feeling good. I'm feeling good about my team as well. You know, I don't want to make any grand proclamations right here on the podcast and jinx myself, but you know, I think I got a very good, well-rounded team, and you know, I'm looking forward to what we do this year. You know, if I can reclaim my throne.
What throne? Okay, we'll let that go. We'll let everyone else think that you know that you do something here, but. Let's get into, you know, what we came to discuss today. I know we want to break down a lot of the things that happened in the off season and also talk about some of the things that are leading into the new season at hand. So the first thing, of course, that, you know, want to touch on is the, you know, the Milwaukee Bucks. Of course, they got Jrue Holiday, but in the middle of all of that, you know, they had that controversy happen with Bogdan Bogdanovic, in which, you know, he signed unofficially, but something happened where that deal fell through.
Yeah, I guess the reports or the rumors were that I guess Bogdanovic didn't want to go to Milwaukee for whatever reason, and I don't know. It's a really weird situation, But you know, they did get Holiday, which was definitely a big upgrade over Eric Bledsoe, who, you know, over the past two or three years, his playoff performance is just not been very, very good at all. So you definitely get Holiday, who's, you know, had some big moments in the playoffs, who's a much better defender, able to score, just an overall better player than Bledsoe. So that was a big, definitely a big get for Milwaukee. And, you know, that'll definitely make them better next year.
Absolutely. I agree with that. And, you know, when it comes to Jrue Holiday, I really think that him and Eric Bledsoe are kind of the same mold of guard. But Jrue is just better at every single aspect. And, you know, it puts Milwaukee into a position where they don't necessarily have to make many changes to what they're doing on offense. But Jrue is just going to come in and do it at a higher rate. And I'm actually, like, happy, you know, that the Bogdan thing fell through. Like, I thought that was an okay addition. You know, I definitely thought that it would help with their spacing. But I actually like the fact that Dante DiVincenzo is now going to be starting at the two, because that makes them a little bit different, a little bit better defensively. And they'll be able to do a little bit more things on the perimeter there. Whereas I felt they may have had to hide Bogdan Bogdanovic in the end of things, especially in the playoffs. And I mean, DiVincenzo is still, you know, okay or passable 3-point shooter. So I think the trade-off there is really good for them.
I definitely understand where you're coming from. I still think, well, obviously they think, I'm sure, but I still think they would have liked to get Bogdanovic just because, you know, when it comes to the playoffs, you know, obviously Giannis has his shortcomings, but at the same time, they have a good regular season bench, but when it comes to playoff time, you need somebody that can, you know, really, you know, score at a high level. And, you know, Bogdanovic can be one of those guys that can score at a higher level than DiVincenzo. But, I mean, at the same time, you know, DiVincenzo still has room to grow, and he could definitely step up this year for sure or in the future years. And I guess the other thing I wanted to mention is, you know, a lot of people or a lot of the talk at the time of the Jrue Holiday trade was, you know, did they give up too much? You know, they gave up Bledsoe. Who was the other person they gave up?
Was it RJ Hampton? I think they drafted him, right? So they sent him to the Nuggets.
Oh, and George Hill as well. And and they gave up, obviously, all those picks. You know, definitely very expensive for, you know, Jrue Holiday. While he's a great player, he's not like a superstar, but obviously still a very good player. But, I mean, I think ultimately at the end of the day, they had to do something to, you know, make Giannis hang around for a few more years. And, you know, whatever price you had to pay for that is worth it in my mind. So I definitely think it was a good trade for them.
No, I thought it was a great trade for Milwaukee. And, you know, one last point just to what you're saying from the bench buckets. I mean, they do have Bryn Forbes, who was an addition. He played in San Antonio last year. And, I mean, he's obviously a flamethrower, you know, from three. So
I don't know about all that, but he's a solid player, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, like, he can shoot. That's all I'm saying. You know,
yeah,
he can shoot.
Yeah, no,
so.
He can.
We'll see how that pans out. And I mean, like, they replaced George Hill with DJ Augustine. So I think their bench is really good. I like the way that Milwaukee looks, and I think we'll talk about them a little bit more when we do some of the predictions. But, you know, obviously, you know, you mentioned the point of Giannis. They wanted Giannis to stay, and he did sign an extension. So it, you know, looks like the Bucks did make the necessary moves that they needed to in order to, you know, keep Giannis in house there, which is a huge win, you know, not only for Milwaukee, but just small market teams in general. You know, the rules being in place with the Supermax, that's not really panned out to show that teams have been able to keep their players, but you have a team here that, you know, of course, they were able to keep Milwaukee. So I'm sorry, you know, they were able to keep Giannis, not Milwaukee. The next thing there, you know, Chris Paul going to the Suns. So I did like the move. I don't want to say that
this is your team. Don't hold back now.
Hold up. Let your real feelings
come out.
Because this is two part, right? This is two part. So when it initially happened, I was extremely excited. I really loved the move, you know, in terms of bringing Chris Paul here. You know, he's definitely going to have an impact on Booker. He's definitely going to have an impact on Ayton, make both of those guys a lot better, you know, teach us a little bit more of how to win those games, especially with Monty being the coach here and them having that chemistry. I think it's a great overall add for the future. What I'm a little bit hesitant on, right, and this is actually like the first time where other people have been a little bit more hype, a little bit more than Joe than me on a move or where my team is going to be. Seriously, though, like they for some reason, everyone is like sold on us making the playoffs. And I'm not sold on that. I think we'll certainly be in the mix. But falling short is completely realistic when you look at the rest of the West. I mean, it's just the West is just so deep when it comes to teams that compete. And it's not going to be easy for us to get there. Can we end up? I mean, especially including the play-in tournament. Can we get there? I believe there is a chance, but I'm not going to guarantee that we're going to make the playoffs this year.
Guarantee. Nah, I agree with you 100%. Yeah, like a lot of people are, you know, basically, yeah, putting the Suns in the playoffs. I've even seen, we'll talk about this more on the predictions episode, but I've even seen, you know, Monty Williams getting early or preseason coach of the year consideration. It's just like, you know, let's pump the brakes a little bit on that.
Relax, but, yeah.
if we just go to the trade itself, it was definitely a trade that was worth it just for the fact of, you know, you have a player like Devin Booker, and you eventually you have to make a move like this to convince him to stay and to show that you're serious about, you know, competing and making the team better. So you definitely had, you know, if you're the front office, you have to make this move just to, you know, give yourself or give Devin more assurance and more confidence about the future of the team. So just, you know, even if they don't, I mean, I guess, you know, he obviously wants to make the playoffs, so we'll see how it goes moving forward, but it's worth the risk just for that, because there's no other way, at least in the immediate future, that I can think of, or no better way that they could have improved this team. So, you know, just for that, it was definitely worth it.
Yeah. No, good trade. I still think that they're out of the playoffs at the end of the series, at the end of the season. But we can move on to unless you had another comment. Sorry.
Yeah, one more point. Yeah, I also like what I also like to trade for. You know, I talked about Devin Booker, but DeAndre Ayton as well. Booker and Ayton are both like players that have talent. You know, they produce, but you know, there's something that's stopping them from winning games. And you know, they had their run in the bubble, but you know, during a full season, there's something that's stopping them. You know, obviously Ayton missed some time this year with the you know taking steroids and all that. But you know, you need somebody to teach you those winning ways and how to actually win games, how to close games and things of that nature. So, you know, even if the trade can even pay dividends, like after Chris Paul is gone from the team, if he could just pass that on to those two players and the other players on the roster as well.
For sure. I think it's great for their development. But this is another developmental year for me. We'll see what next year looks like. Dennis Schroeder to the Lakers. The first thing that I thought when it comes to this trade is congratulations to Schroeder for being on a championship contender. You know, he played for the Hawks and the Thunder while they were rebuilding, and you know, he didn't really have an opportunity to compete for anything. And you know, congratulations.
I mean, they got to the playoffs. The playoffs.
congratulations to the Lakers as well for picking up somebody with Schroeder's talent and ability, and adding that to an already championship roster. You give what you will and what you may to championship roster, but you know, definitely think it's a great add. Schroeder is a nice fit there. Brown is always talking about needing another guy that can play make and go get a bucket as well. And Schroeder really, he checks both of those boxes nicely. So I do think that this is, you know, a really good addition, a strong addition for LA. Schroeder is going to help them a lot, not only with his scoring ability, but being able to play off of the ball, being able to play make and get buckets for other guys. And, you know, I'm really excited to see the way that he plays off of LeBron and AD, and also how those rotations shake out. Like, I'm pretty sure that Schroeder is going to start. But at the same time, I think that with the Lakers not having as strong of a bench, they do want Schroeder to do a lot of his running with the second unit, just to make sure that, you know, there's some production on the court at all times. If there's any like thought process or, you know, intricacies, I think to what this trade is going to mean, it's really about how the rotations are going to shake out.
And, you know, I also agree that this was a good trade for the Lakers, you know, pick up some, you know, cheaper talent to add to the team that can, you know, soak up some minutes and play well in the regular season. The only thing that I think about this trade is, you know, the Lakers are obviously a team that's, you know, primarily concerned with the playoffs and, you know, contending for a championship. And, you know, the one thing that crossed my mind is just, you know, how much, you know, Dennis Schroeder, I'm not sure, well, he definitely doesn't have as much playoff experience as Rondo. And, you know, we all talk about playoff Rondo, you know, every year, playoff Rondo. Doing this and that, you know, going off in the playoffs and making so many great plays. Yeah, I just wonder how much, you know, the talent and the youth difference between him and Rondo offsets what Rondo brings to the team in the playoffs. I think that would be interesting to see, you know, once they get to that point. That's the only thing I can really think about, you know, with this trade. But you know, at the end of the day, I would have made the same trade too. Like, Dennis Schroeder just had a great year. He can play. He proved he could play off the ball a little bit and, you know, shoot the long range shot. So I definitely think he fits, you know, into the Lakers and what in their quest to repeat this year.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess moving forward to the next big trade that we want to talk about is, you know, the Sixers finally did it. They finally traded Al Horford, you know. we can rewind to last offseason, which is actually over a year ago, which is crazy to think about. And, you know, thinking about when Al Horford came to the Sixers, everybody was like surprised, but also optimistic or cautiously optimistic about how it could work out. But it did not work out at all. They definitely needed to find a way. Definitely needed to find a way to get themselves off of that. And, you know, props to, well, first, you know, props to the Sixers front or Sixers ownership for completely changing around the coaching staff and the front office, bringing in Doc Rivers and all the coaches that he brought on, and bringing in Daryl Morey, and obviously one of the best GMs in the league. Mm-hmm. And he was able to actually trade Al Horford, even though he gave up a first-round pick. The first-round pick wasn't until 2025, and it's lightly protected. And he actually brought back something of value to the Sixers, which is in Danny Green, which is, you know, your prototypical 3-and-D player that can, you know, he has a lot of experience. He just won two championships back-to-back. So, you know, he actually got something of real value that the Sixers could use at the same time. So I think it was definitely like the best trade that the Sixers could possibly make in that situation. And I think it will definitely, we'll definitely see the dividends of it on the court this season.
Absolutely, man. I almost shed a tear of joy after this deal. Like when I saw it flash, I was just like, thank you so much, Daryl Morey. Like I didn't think, because I was looking at the Sixers cap salary, their situation, and there was just no way that they were going to be able to build or get out of anything or do much of anything unless they got Al Horford off of the books. And I didn't think that there was a way to get it done, you know, until Daryl Morey was there. I was like, if there's anyone that can do it, it's him. So this was a phenomenal move. The Sixers, yeah, they opened the floor up, the backup for, you know, Embiid and Simmons to try this again, you know, with the proper spacing. I think this is the first time that they're actually going to have the necessary spacing that they need on the floor to be, you know, at the best capacity that they can.
Well, I'm going to correct you a little bit. Okay. 2017-18 team, I think, when it still had Dario and Rocco, you know, that's a precious team to Sixers fans of the process era, but they just weren't good enough then. But they did have good spacing then, and you could see how it worked pretty well. So, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, point, I think, I mean, with Danny Green and also Seth, and then moving Tobias to the four, I don't know. We'll look at that again. But, you know, I think this actually rivals that just in terms of the space that's going to be provided on the floor. I don't think you guys have ever had. I mean, like, you've had J.J. Redick, but, you know, Seth Curry, Danny Green, and then Tobias can still shoot. Him being at the four, I think is a really big point there. But overall, you know, regardless of the argument, I think it is great for Philly. And, you know, I think that, you know, like you said, Danny Green was a good add for right now. And it just opens up so much more flexibility for what, you know, Philly will be able to do in future years with their contracts and bringing in new individuals. So, yeah, this was one that I was very, very happy about.
For sure. Yeah, it was definitely much needed for the Sixers. And, you know, you mentioned Seth Curry, who Daryl Morey traded Josh Richardson for. You know, I think they also gave up a second round pick maybe. And, you know, a lot of people look at that on paper and it's like, you know, Josh on paper or in a vacuum, you could say Josh is the better player than Seth. But I think mm-hmm. it was really a win-win for both the Mavs and the Sixers, just because, you know, obviously the Sixers, they need that shooting. They need that shooting desperately. Seth is, what, second all-time in three-point percentage, and he can handle the rock a little bit. So he definitely just fits in perfectly with what the Sixers need. And then he's also on I think he has 3 years left on his deal at a cheap price. So everything that the Sixers need to, you know, gain flexibility with their roster and their cap space, it was perfect. Then you have Josh Richardson on the Mavs, who – I was saying last year, you know, the Mavs just need somebody. They need a wing to take them to the next level. They need a high-level 3-and-D wing. It remains to be seen how high-level Josh Richardson will be for them. But I think, you know, for what they had and what they're able to do, I think that was definitely a great pickup for them, just because, you know, Josh Richardson, you know, last year was a little bit of a down year for him, but it was a kind of a down year for the whole Sixers team. So if you put him back in the right situation, I think you could kind of see him go back to, you know, the trajectory that he was on when he was with Miami, you know, being that strong, you know, 3-and-D wing, could shoot the ball at an acceptable level, and also, you know, defend some of the best players. He can also be a secondary ball handler. I think you'll really see him, you know, flourish in Dallas.
I agree with that. You know, I think a lot of the things that were holding back Josh last year also were some of the injuries that he was dealing with and, you know, not mm-hmm. really being able to get that continuity on the floor. So, you know, playing with Luka, he's obviously going to have those opportunities for open shots. He's going to get the opportunity to defend at a high level, opportunity to play make a little bit. I think if there were any team that I would put Josh Richardson on, Dallas would be it. Like, that's kind of like the prototypical team and fit that I would want for a player of his style. So I'm really, I feel great about the trade. I feel great about Josh Richardson in Dallas and also Seth Curry in Philadelphia. So like you said, man, this was just a win-win for both franchises all around. I want to go to one that I thought was actually pretty surprising, just because I thought OKC was going to keep him. So OKC traded Golden State for they gave Kelly Oubre around. Of course, they gave him away. Sorry. Of course, they got some picks back because, you know, Sam Presti loves to keep a treasure chest of picks. But, you know, the Warriors, they always seem to make these like really smart moves, right? And yeah. Kelly Oubre, after losing Klay, that's not a bad player to add. You know, for what they gave up, it's just, you know, they get that two-way ability back. You know, of course, Oubre is not the shooter that Klay is, but I think that Oubre brings a ton of ton of energy. You know, he's going to shoot. He's going to have a pretty above average, I'll say above league average, three-pointer. You know, he's definitely going to defend as well. And, you know, Kelly Oubre has not gotten an opportunity to play off or a play next to a player of Steph's caliber.
A lot of players haven't.
exactly, right? And it's just like that, having that stardom next to you is a little bit different. I want to see how he plays with him. He also has Andrew Wiggins on the roster. So this is a nice place for Kelly to get in and really grow as a player. And I'm looking forward to seeing what he does this season. But, you know, really hats off to the Warriors for pulling off, you know, after that. I mean, that was it's the word I'm looking for. Devastating, you know, to hear about Klay's injury. You know, I was so ready for him to come back, but being able to pivot so quickly and pick up Kelly Oubre to fill in that hole, that was a really good move from them.
Yeah, for sure. Kelly, man, he kind of had, you know, a little breakout last season while he was with the Suns, and you know, he was playing really well, playing really strong last year. And adding somebody like that to the Warriors basically for free, you know, even without, you know, without Klay, unfortunately, I feel so bad for Klay. But without Klay, unfortunately, man, that's a good coup for them, because Kelly can, obviously he won't be Klay, but he can, I guess between him and Wiggins, that can, you know, you would think that they could replace a lot of what Klay gives. Obviously not the high level shooting, but, you know, some of the defense and some of the scoring as well. So that was definitely a good pick for the Warriors to hopefully, you know, keep them afloat this year. So I guess moving on to one of the last big trades of the offseason, there was a lot of talk about what was going on in Houston with Harden and Westbrook. Both of them seemed like they wanted out, and then, you know, then they said nah, and there was just a lot of going back and forth about what was really going on there. And Houston finally made the trade. They traded Westbrook to Washington for John Wall, which, you know, there was rumors about that, I guess, from the media, but I don't know. It just seems like on the face of it, it just seems like a weird trade. Like, you're trading Westbrook, kind of similar players almost. You know, mm-hmm. neither are high level shooters, you know, that you will want next to Harden. You know, they're kind of like a defensive slashing archetype. You know, Wall hasn't been healthy for a long time, but, you know, I guess, you know, Westbrook wanted out, and that's what they wanted to do. So now, I mean, as the roster stands now, Harden is still there. It seems like he's doing his best to get out of there, but he's there for now. And, you know, just Houston overall right now is just like, they're a big mystery.
What if?
How are Harden and Wall going to fit together? Then you have Boogie in the mix, and there's just a lot of things going on in Houston. So I guess my question to you is, you know, what do you feel about this team? Like, where are they going to go this year? Is Harden going to be gone? Or, you know, what do you see for, oh, I guess, what do you think about the trade, and then what do you see for them moving forward?
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, I'll just start anywhere, because there's so much going on here. But first of all, I don't think the Harden gets traded, at least not right now. So, I mean, Houston's asking price is really high right now, and it should be because it's James Harden. But the teams that were listed, Brooklyn, Miami, Milwaukee, Philly, I just don't see a trade partner with those teams without them giving up, you know, a big part of their core. And where we are with the start of the season, what's going on in Houston after Houston did everything that they could to make James Harden happy, and then James Harden wants out now. You know, he only has, I want to say he has 2 years left, including this year, and then a player option for the third year. So I don't think a team is willing to give up, a superstar that they have, or a star even, that they have really good rapport with, that they already know how he fits on the roster, for a shot, you know, shot towards the moon on Harden. I mean, all of these teams are contending rosters. So I find myself hard-pressed to believe that a trade is going to happen with those teams. I think the only team that really has a shot at making that trade is Milwaukee, because they could give up Chris Middleton. But the fit between Harden and Giannis seems a bit awkward to me.
Part of me really wants to see that, though. Honestly, I think it can work. I don't think it'll happen, but
I'm getting into that. I can definitely see like a ton of Giannis Harden pick and rolls. But it's just, or even if they trade it off and, like, you know, Giannis does his thing and Harden does his thing. But to me, those players are just better suited on different rosters. So, I mean, overall, I just don't think a trade happens right now. You know, Philly isn't giving up Bener and Bede. Miami isn't giving up Jimmy or Bam. And I don't think Houston is going to go for some of their younger pieces like Tyler Hero and others.
Well, let me just talking about Tyler Hero, I just don't understand. I see a lot of Miami fans, or I don't know, just like saying they won't give up Hero for Harden. I just do not understand that.
Are they high?
Like, what are these people like? I mean, I know he played well in the bubble, but like, come on now, like, you got to. about Tyler Hero here.
It's Tyler Hero.
If you are one of those fans that says you wouldn't give up Hero for Harden, like, You gotta, I don't know, find your priorities.
Yeah, you do. Like, let's that's a whole different discussion, but we can take a step back there for a moment and just look at that quickly. Tyler Hero, James Harden. There's no discussion there. Like, that's a trade that Miami would absolutely make. But I just don't see it happening. I don't think Houston is actually taking that back. And I think a lot of the reason, too, and one of the things that's actually not being discussed here, is that James Harden has a 15% trade kicker. So Houston is going to have to pay even more money when they trade him. So they're going to want a lot back. So I think this is really going to be like the same situation that happened with AD, is where we just – you know, we're going to keep playing until we reach some sort of impasse where Harden says, I'm not going to play anymore until you trade me. And I really think that's the only way that he can get out, unless he allows them to trade him wherever he would like. But he's, you know, he's going to get traded to a team like OKC, where they don't have, you know, they have some assets, and they have, you know, they have the picks, but they're not in a place to contend. I just don't see another place where, and I certainly haven't done a deep dive here, but just out of the teams that he mentioned, you know, I don't see that happening. I don't see that coming to fruition. In terms of Westbrook, you know, I think he's going to kill in Washington. I mean, I think he's going to get back. Maybe not the triple-double MVP season, Westbrook, but he's back under Scott Brooks. He has, you know, a lot of spacing here. He has another superstar next to him in Beal. The rest of the team can space. You know, there's been a lot of talk about Denny Avdija being the starter for Washington. Thomas Bryant can obviously shoot a bit. And then Rui Hachimura, he's been shooting a bit more. I don't think he's going to be like a huge threat from three, but they do have lineups where they can put in Davis Bertans, where you get like super spaced. And, you know, that's like a lineup where Westbrook would have complete freedom, like he did, you know, last year when they were playing more five out with the small ball in Houston. So I think, you know, it's a really good trade for Washington. I think, you know, John Wall's fine. He's going to get his reclamation back in Houston, get another chance to play away from Washington and what he's done there. But yeah, I just kind of think we're going to be in this kind of like mess. This kind of hodgepodge of, you know, what if, and there's going to be some murky news coming out regarding Houston and where they're going. That's where I am with them.
I got you. Some quick follow-up. I agree with Westbrook. He should have a great year. I mean, last year he averaged what, 27-8-7, mm-hmm. next to Harden, and nobody has a higher usage rate than Harden. So even though Beal, you look at him, he's like, he averaged 30 last year, but still nobody has a higher usage than Harden. And also Beal is also more comfortable, you know, shooting, catch and shoot threes than Harden is. So there could be more synergy there with that partnership. And then also, yeah, I think with the Harden stuff, I think at a minimum, you don't see him moved until the trade deadline, probably, if at all this year. And then as far as like the trade kicker, I think if they find somewhere that he really wants to go, then he can like waive that kicker if necessary. So if he like really wants out, he can like waive that and you know, make it a little bit easier for them. But yeah, agree with everything else you said.
Cool, man. I don't think we even need to spend more time there. Like, that it is what it is. Like, that trade is just going to be what it is. It was just like you said, it was pretty weird. It was kind of like you're trading the same player for the same player, same huge contract for the same huge contract. It's just, you know, Westbrook had a lot less questions than Wall did. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I mean, we can jump into the draft. You know, there, of course, before this specific draft, there was a lot of talk. I mean, going back to 2017, 2018, where everyone was saying that the 2020 draft really didn't yield a lot of like really huge prospects or prospects that were going to be impactful or make a difference in the league. So I'm intrigued to see, you know, where they're like, what's going to happen with this draft. I do think there are a lot of people who got picked that are going to add some significant depth to certain teams. But there were only a few teams that are going to be like right away starters. So we can start with the top three spot prospects. You know, what we think about that. You know, we'll just start with the first three picks. So I'll start with Anthony Edwards. So with Anthony Edwards, I'm just going to be completely open here. I'm a little biased just because I wasn't as high on him pre-draft. And I mean, Minnesota's backcourt is already pretty cluttered. I mean, they got Ricky Rubio. They have D'Angelo Russell. They have Jarrett Culver. You know, there are a lot of pieces there. What's his name? Malik Beasley. They have a lot of pieces there in the backcourt that are just kind of stable. And even at the small forward position, they have a few other guys as well. So I don't know if he's going to have a clear way to playing time immediately. Like, I'm sure he's going to be put in the rotation. But I don't know what type of noise he's actually going to make in Minnesota. We'll see if he's able to increase his field goal percentage and three-point percentage like they've projected for him. That's not one of the things that I like to see when I'm looking at college stats, just because field goal percentage does not typically trend positive for college players to the NBA. But we'll see. We'll see how that works out. Did you have any thoughts on Anthony before I move to James Wiseman?
I feel like Anthony is just like, this is weird because you have these stories that come out about, you know, him talking about basketball wasn't his first love, and how you talk about he's working on staying engaged for the whole game. And, you know, obviously, like, the media kills him for this, that type of stuff. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you probably – a lot of players probably have, you know, similar thoughts that just don't say it out loud. So I think there's a chance he could, you know, be still pretty good. Like, he's had some good moments in preseason. I think him going to the Timberwolves where he doesn't – you know, he doesn't have to have everything put on his shoulders immediately. You have Kat and D'Lo there. I think they'll and Rubio – who's a good point guard. You definitely have pieces around him that can, I think that's the important thing with that we forget about, you know, draft picks as well. Like, there might be like some even more talented players that don't do as well just because they're stuck on a team with nobody. Like, there's nobody to help them like get better or build better habits and things of that nature. So actually having like decent players around you can take you or increase your potential. Which we could talk about with I feel the same way about LaMelo, who we'll talk about also. But just having decent players around you can help you even get better or reach a higher potential than you could have, you know, just playing with bums. So, you know, I that's a long way to say I don't really know where it's going to go for Anthony Edwards, but I feel like I feel like I'm positive on him right now.
Okay, I'm kind of just like here, it's here there, like. If he doesn't really do much in the 4 years, I wouldn't be surprised. If he does break out, like, I mean, when I say break out, I mean, like, become, like, a really strong player. I would be a little surprised. But, you know, we'll see how that pans out. I'm kind of, like, not here or there. It's definitely not going to happen this year, in my opinion. Maybe next year he'll have a larger opportunity. But James Wiseman – for the Warriors. Really happy for the Warriors with this pick. You know, they secured their big man for the future. I've heard nothing but praise coming from the Warriors camp and their players in terms of what they think about James Wiseman and his abilities. You know, I think Wiseman can definitely have an impact right away with his rebounding and also his elite blocking skills. Now, of course, we have a very small sample size. This is because he only played, you know, 3 games in college. He had 23 minutes per game across that span, but he was averaging 3 blocks a game over that span. And that's something that does trend well to the NBA. So, you know, I think that's something that he could really impact right away with, or have an impact right away with. And really with Golden State, they haven't really had a secure center in place since Andrew Bogut. And you know, I know a lot of people will say that Andrew Bogut wasn't that good, but Andrew Bogut is a really good player. And I think people underrated him a little bit. Yeah. So, you know, James Wiseman, I think will do a lot of great things for them. And I'm happy that they went in this direction. Did you have any comments on him?
Just real quick. Like him going to the Warriors is kind of weird. Well, first of all, it's weird that, and in the sense that he's only played 3 games in college, so didn't really get to see him that much. And then the Warriors, they don't, like you said, they don't typically have like a high usage or high like potential big man, because the big man doesn't really need to do that much for them because they have Steph, Clay, and Draymond, who can also play center. But I think him adding that element to their team could definitely help them now, especially now that Clay's out. They're going to have to find like different ways to score and different ways to do things on the court. So he definitely balances their team out. And if he does fulfill on that potential that he has, then he can just make them that much stronger.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. And, you know, I think, you know, the third pick is kind of where both of those come together, where, you know, it's a really good outlook for the future, but it's also, you know, a good space for right now. And, you know, the third pick with LaMelo Ball, I think, you know, there was no other place for Charlotte to go at, you know, except for that pick. I think there was, you know, if they would have drafted someone else at that position, it would have been doing themselves a disservice. Just because, I mean, like, yes, they have Devontae Graham and Terry Rozier there, who are scoring guards. I mean, Devontae Graham does a bit more playmaking, but Terry Rozier, absolutely. And I think You know, Charlotte is less keen or less sure about Terry Rozier's future there. He plays much more like a sixth man than he does a starting point guard, in my opinion. And I mean, LaMelo Ball has looked, he's looked really good in the preseason. And just like his playmaking ability, like the passes that he's been able to make, being 6'7", being able to see the whole floor, and just like he's not afraid to pull out like these crazy, like these flashy passes, man, like as a rookie. And, you know, I think that's going to trend really well over his career. Of course, you know, his shot is going to be something that's a work in progress. But I think he's going to be a fine defender just because of his size and length, you know, at the point guard position. And then playmaking is there. He actually looks to pass, which is great. So I think he has a great future in Charlotte. He also has an opportunity to get more minutes. And I don't think that he's going to start. I do think he's going to start off coming off of the bench. But it'll be interesting to see if he ends up starting next to Devontae Graham in the future games here of this season.
Yeah, with LaMelo, I mean, Charlotte, they just need to go for star power. Like, that's what they need. They need a star. And LaMelo probably gives them the best chance of that in this draft. And, you know, they've tried the things, you know, they pick like, a Frank Kaminsky and things like proven college players that should have skills that translate. But at the end of the day, to go far in this league, you need to have stars, you need to have star power. So LaMelo was definitely the right pick for that. I think that I still have concerns about LaMelo just because, I mean, I still think it was the right pick, but I still have concerns about, I think he could follow like a similar trajectory to his brother almost, because obviously his brother's a great passer. His brother's probably, or his brother came in a better defender than he did. And I think they both, well, Lonzo is starting to pick it up now. But I think LaMelo will have, you know, struggled a lot with his efficiency, with his shooting and things of that nature. So, you know, I think it will take some time for him. But at the end of the day, you got to take that risk on upside, especially when you're in a position such as the Charlotte Hornets. You're not going to get many free agents. Well, they did get one this year, but as far as like superstars and things of that nature, but you're not going to get many free agents. So you have to really get your stars in the draft. So that was definitely the right pick for them.
Yeah, man, I agree. And, you know, I'll be the first to say that LaMelo is going to have maybe a horrendous assist to turnover ratio for a point guard this year. I see a whole lot of, you know, maybe, I mean, once he starts to get the ball in his hands more, a lot of 9 assists, 7 turnover nights. I mean, like, it's going to happen. It's inevitable. But I think, like you said, you know, he has the most upside. He definitely has a lot of room to grow. And yeah, we'll see what happens there. Yeah. So, you know, in terms of, you know, different draft picks that we may think will surprise, or that I think will surprise, or, you know, just overall people that were surprising that they were drafted in their position. You know, I think definitely our pick of Jalen Smith caught a few people off guard, given, you know, some of the people that were still on the board.
Our, he means the Suns.
yes. But I was happy with that pick. You know, this is kind of becoming James Jones's routine to pick the player that he wants in the draft, regardless of any type of big board ranking. He did that last year with Cam Johnson, and that worked out really well. Jalen Smith has looked really good in the preseason. He brings rim protection. He can space the floor a little bit. He plays the power forward. So I think in the future he'll be a nice forward to slot next to DeAndre Ayton, if it ends up going that way. In terms of other surprises, you know, just I want to say, like, one lottery pick that I kind of want to highlight, actually two, were Devin Vassell, and it might be pronounced Vassell, but him to the Spurs, and then Tyrese Halliburton to the Kings. So I think both of those guys are really good. I think they're really good. And like the Spurs, I'm saying I'm surprised because like the Spurs always find some sort of value somehow, you know, in the draft, wherever they're drafting. But Devin Vassell and Tyrese Halliburton have looked really good in the preseason, and they just look like just stable wings. You know, I know that Halliburton is a point guard as well, but he can play at the two. But I just feel that those were the picks that I feel we're going to look back. And Denny Avija as well, to a smaller level there. But I think those are the picks that we're going to look back at this draft and say, like, wow, you know, they really knocked it out of the park with those particular draft picks.
Yeah. The other one, I guess, that you didn't mention that I wanted to highlight was a lot of people were surprised when Patrick Williams got selected by the Chicago Bulls at number 4. I think a lot of people didn't really see that coming.
Until you see him play.
We'll see. Like, especially in this draft, I feel like after the top three, it was basically like anything goes, because there's no real consensus on, you know, a lot of people thought the draft was weak or whatever. So there's no real consensus on, you know, who's going to be, you know, a really good player from this draft. So, you know, after those top three prospects were off the board, you know, take a shot on the guy you want to get.
For sure.
So I think that was, you know, we'll see how that turns out. They definitely, you know, on the wing, they could definitely use, you know, wing players. They have Kobe White, they have Levine, they have Markkanen, they have Wendell Carter, who are all like young, I guess, core pieces. So adding, you know, a wing that can maybe fit into that future definitely made sense.
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess just moving forward, I guess the rest about the draft, I just want to talk about a couple teams that I think, you know, did pretty well in the draft.
Mm-hmm.
Number one was the Sixers, who, you know, they just had the good luck of Tyrese Maxey sliding down the board to them at 21, which nobody expected.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just a gift. You know, Tyrese in the preseason, he's played pretty well. He's, you know, he just come in and, you know, he's just so fast on the court. He showed his finishing ability and his defensive energy and things of that nature. He just fits really well with, you know, what the Sixers need for the future. So that was definitely a good pick for them. I also like the Nuggets, who what I liked about the Nuggets is, you know, they keep taking chances on, you know, high ranking, I guess, people that are like high ranked out of high school that fell for whatever reason, like my boy Bowl 2 times, Bowl Square, who he had his injury coming out of college, so he kind of fell down the board. You have obviously Michael Porter Jr., who had his injury in college and he fell down the board. And now you have RJ Hampton, who was one of the top ranked high school players, went overseas to New Zealand. And, you know, he kind of struggled in that league. So, you know, a lot of people were down on him, but, you know, it's kind of weird with, you know, we still really don't know how to compare like overseas leagues versus college. You know, I'm of the mind that if he did go to college, he probably would have been drafted higher, but it is what it is, you know, that he fell down the board and they took a chance on him. And, you know, I kind of like that they do, at least with, obviously it's already paying off with Michael Porter Jr. It looks like it might pay off with Bol Bol, and, you know, maybe they could go 3 for 3. And the last team I wanted to highlight was the Dallas Mavericks, who I thought they had a pretty good draft as well. They took, I guess, Josh Green in the first round, who a lot of people, I guess he's one of those players that could have some pretty high potential in this draft. And he's also, you know, a wing player, which is what they need, you know, next to Luka and KP. So he definitely was a smart pick for them. And then in the second round, I thought they did really well with Tyrell Terry, who was, you know, when I was reading mock drafts, he was like ranked all the way up in the lottery in some cases. You know, a lot of people like his shot making and dribbling and all that. He definitely looks like somebody who could be a solid player. You know, a lot of people compare him, his game is similar to Trey. Obviously, nobody's expecting him to be Trey Young, but, you know, if he can bring some of that to the team, then that would definitely be very valuable. And then Tyler Bay who they also picked in the second round, who was somebody that, you know, me and a couple friends were hoping the Sixers would take a look at, just a four, somebody who could play the four, who's very athletic, but who has a potential with his jump shot. And so I just think they did very well in the draft. I don't know if you had anybody that you had in mind.
No, I agree. I would say the other team I would mention that you didn't would just be the Raptors. You know, they're another team, just like the Spurs, who I just feel like just fine guys in the draft. You know, Malachi Flynn, who they got at 29, you know, he's been playing well. He's been really doing well in the preseason, you know, finding guys, shooting well. He has a really nice shooting touch. And to be able to draft a rotational guy, it seems, you know, at the 29th pick, that's a big deal for the Raptors. And then in the second round, they got Jalen Harris, who, you know, is another guy that's just going to be, you know, he may not play this year, but he's another guy that's going to be there on the wing. And, you know, I just think they had a solid draft. And I think just like the Spurs, they're just a team that sometimes gets slept on as far as their drafting ability and being able to get these guys that produce later on, that may not, you know, kind of jump out at you initially. But, you know, I think the Raptors did really well also. Yeah. So, you know, go ahead.
I was going to say, I'm kind of at the point where no matter who the Raptors draft, it doesn't matter. Like, they'll find a way to, like, make them look great. Like, it's crazy. Like, I guess it's really a shout-out to their development team, but the Raptors always have somebody coming on the floor, you know, at some point during the season. You're just like, who is that guy? And end up with, like, 20 points or something.
Exactly. Yeah. No, you definitely hit the nail on the head with that one. But yeah, so we can jump into free agency. You know, I know this year wasn't like a huge year in terms of, you know, like really large free agents, but there was definitely a lot of movement, a lot of activity, you know, on the free agent wire this year. So starting off, you know, with the champions, the Lakers, they reloaded. You know, they added Montrezl Harrell, Marcus Gasol, Wes Matthews. Of course, we discussed Dennis Schroeder earlier. And then they also re-signed Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. So what do you think about the Lakers? I mean, are they the favorites in your opinion to repeat for a championship? What are your thoughts on them just, you know, with the additions they made and then also the outlook for the season?
I think, I think at this point you have to consider them the favorites just because, you know, everything really revolves around their two players, and, you know, they kind of have, with those two players, they kind of have a match or a matchup advantage, and everybody else just plays off of that. And as long as they can keep that formula, I think you have to consider them the favorites. As far as their specific signings, I guess they lost Dwight and JaVale McGee. They lost Rondo. I kind of talked about earlier, I guess, between Schroeder and Rondo, how that could maybe affect the team. I think maybe there could be a similar thing with Montrez, depending on matchups. Like, I mean, Montrez is obviously a very good player. He won Sixth Man of the Year, but he'll be in a different role now, I guess, with the Lakers. And, you know, if you go back to last year's playoffs, low key, he really didn't have a good playoff. So he could definitely turn it around this year, but in certain matchups, like if they play the Nuggets with Jokic, like that was, When Jokic was killing the Lakers, that's when they brought in Dwight to like kind of guard Jokic and get him off his game a little bit. So are they going to miss that this year? I guess you kind of have Gasol that can do a similar thing to that as well. Then you add, I guess you got Wes Matthews. Oh, they also lost Danny Green. So I guess you got Wes Matthews replacing Danny Green. I think Danny Green's a little bit better. And then, you know, KCP, he balled out in the playoffs. He took that early criticism in the playoffs, but then he balled out after that. But, I mean, overall, you kind of have to say their roster is basically the same, maybe even slightly improved at the point guard position. But we'll see. I think you have to consider them the favorites just because, you know, it's really dependent on the top two guys.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, like, you know, when it comes to Wes Matthews versus Danny Green, I think Wesley Matthews is a slightly better three-point shooter, and I think Danny Green might be a slightly better overall defender. So, you know, they're both 3-and-D guys. You know, it was an addition that kind of kept that together. Definitely love what you mentioned about Trez and being able to provide that defense when they need it. But I think also to what we need to mention there is that the addition of Trez, whenever he's the starting center, it shifts AD to the role that he wants to play at power forward. So that is going to be a huge win for AD's happiness and also what they're able to do on offense, their flexibility there, because as we've seen in the playoffs, AD is definitely an official threat from three.
Yeah, actually, that brings up something I was wondering about. What is their starting lineup going to be? Because it looks like they've been starting Gasol in the preseason, but I don't know. I guess one way or another, they'll start at center next to AD. So I guess your overall point is true. Like AD has said many times before that he wants to play the four, even though I think everybody sees that. They're better with him at the five, but which they'll probably do more of in the playoffs. But yeah. I agree.
Yeah. So, the next thing, of course, the Hawks, they just, they got a complete overhaul. They added so many new pieces this offseason. So Danilo Gallinari, Bogdan Bogdanovic after the Milwaukee Crumble, Rajon Rondo, Chris Dunn, which is a low-key offer there. So they got a lot of players that could complement Trae Young. But I'll start here. So on paper, I just want to say on paper, this team looks like it's ready to make some noise. It looks like, they have a lot of things that they put together. Of course, Clint Capella, after, being injured after the trade last year, he's ready to go this year. So it's looking like the initial starting lineup is going to be Trae Young, Bogdan Bogdanovic, DeAndre Hunter or Cam Reddish. I think Hunter is winning that battle right now. And then John Collins and Clint Capella. And then off the bench, they'll have Rondo or Chris Dunn, depending. Kevin Huerter, DeAndre Hunter or Cam Reddish. Then they'll have Danilo Gallinari. And, I don't even know who's the backup center for them right now.
I think the rookie they drafted might play backup, I think, center.
Okay. They have a nice roster on paper. When you look at that, you look at that team and you say, man, they can do some damage. However, I feel the same exact way about the Hawks as I do the Phoenix Suns. There are a lot of people that are putting the Hawks into the playoffs and just guaranteeing that. But the East got stronger just like the West did. I don't think it's a guarantee that they make it. I think they'll be in the mix, but it is completely realistic if they fall short. You still have the Wizards, who added Russell Westbrook, who's going to be a menace in the East for any team to deal with. And if you look back, the Wizards did make the playoffs, pretty consistently when they had Wall and Beal together. So I don't think that this is a team that should be looked over in any means. And then you have the Magic, who have already been there. They have Aaron Gordon moving to his traditional spot at the four. So I think he's going to take a step forward this season. Markelle Fultz, he's going to play a little bit better this season, still getting away from that injury. He's had another year to kind of put things together. So I think he's going to be the stable point guard for them this year. I just feel like, you still have these teams that are there. And I mean, Chicago is like a dark horse of a team that might be able to make some noise this year just because they have the roster and the talent level to kind of do those things. And Billy Donovan is a much better coach than Jim Boylan was. He might put them in a much better spot this year. But overall, I'm not ready to just say, hey, the Hawks are just going to catapult into the playoffs. I mean, this is a team that to me has a very high variance. So they could be really good. Like everything comes together, everything clicks, and they can be like a fifth seed, but they could definitely have those struggles and end up in the ninth or 10th spot. So, it really, to me, it depends on the answer of like how the surrounding Eastern teams are doing and what they're doing and how they're playing. But I'm not ready to put the Hawks into the playoffs. What are your thoughts there?
I agree overall. Obviously they have a little bit of an easier path than the Suns just because they're in the Eastern Conference. But they definitely, like, as much as we talk about, Trae Young's defense and how, obviously he'll probably never be a plus defender. and you know how much Trae Young's defense, you know, hurts the Hawks. Another underrated aspect about the team is also how much worse their offense gets when Trae Young sits. So I think like with the additions that they made in the offseason, they definitely kind of address both of those at the same time. You have guys like Gallo, you have guys like Bogdanovich that can, or even Rondo too, that can keep the offense running at a competent level when Trae sits. You also have guys like Rondo again and Dunn that can bring the defensive intensity, bring a defensive ability when you need it. And also they still have DeAndre Hunter, who's a good defender. Clint Capella, who didn't – I don't think Clint played for the Hawks last year. Clint Capella, he's also a good defender. So you have plenty – you have a really good balance of offense and defense. So I think that I mean, you're right that it has to all come together. Like, there's a lot of new players, new pieces on this team. It's going to take time for them to gel and build chemistry and all that. But I think they – I'm not ready to just say that, you know, they are a playoff team, but I definitely wouldn't be surprised if they did make it.
Right. No, like I said, they could be as – to me, they could be as high as the fifth seed, like, just because of how that talent looks on paper. I think they have a really solid roster, but there are just a lot of other things that come into play there, and I don't know if they're ready to take that step yet. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see how that turns out. You know, what are your thoughts on – the young guys getting max contracts this year? So De'Aaron Fox, Jason Tatum, Bam Adebayo, and Brandon Ingram, they all got maxed out this year. And there were a lot of people with certain players there. So Jason Tatum, everyone seemed to kind of respect that. But when it came to the other three, you know, there was some hesitation on whether or not they deserved that money. But what are your thoughts on that?
You know, I'm the type of person that, you know, I just see it as the market is the market. Like the top or the good young players, when they come off their rookie contract, they get their max extension. So, you know, to me, you know, I think that it's fine. I think that they all deserve it. And, you know, especially, you know, Bam just was a key part of the Heat team making the finals. I mean, his injury, along with Goran's, like, altered how the finals went, probably. You have Ingram, who had a crazy season last year. Tatum, you know, obviously took a big step forward. And then Fox, I mean, especially like somebody like Sacramento, okay, you don't give them that contract, and then what do you do after that? You're not going to just find somebody as good as Fox. You're not going to just turn around and find somebody as good as Fox. So, you got to pay your guys.
Absolutely, man. It's a no-brainer to me. You have to, especially considering the lack of talent that was in free agency this year, you just have to pay them. You have to pay them. Yeah. They mean too much. And, you know, especially with them all being, you know, young and growing, and they're all going to get better, it's a no-brainer to me. So I'm right on the same page with you there.
Right. You know, I want to say something real quick. You're talking about how they're young and going to get better. Like, a lot of, I think as sports fans in general, but yeah, NBA fans also, we always think about, you know, contracts as, and in some cases it is, you know, rewarding past performance, but it's also a bit of, you know, projecting performance going forward as well. You have to keep that in mind too. Like, all these young guys, they should, you know, if they stay healthy, they should, over the next 4 years, prove to be worth, you know, that contract. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I absolutely know what you mean, man. And I'm in a total agreement with you there, too. I mean, it just makes complete sense to me. So another guy that, you know, people thought was overpaid, and you mentioned it earlier, was the Gordon Hayward signing for Charlotte. So... And the details on the contract, that I don't have those in front of me. Do you know exactly what he got signed for?
Four years, $120 million.
Okay. So to me, that is a great signing. That's a great signing for Charlotte. Exactly what they need. I mean, you can tell just by the way that Charlotte plays, and you can just tell by the resolve of their coach, James Borrego, they want to win. You know, and the only way that they're going to do that is if they get a wing in place similar to Gordon Hayward. Now, there are a lot of wings in the league that do things to a higher level than Gordon Hayward, but Gordon Hayward is a do-everything wing. He can score. He can playmake for you. He rebounds. He can defend. You know, this is the type of player that Charlotte needs if they want to take the next step. And in terms of the actual contract, it being, you know, 4 years, $120 million, there are a lot of guys that make a lot more than Gordon Hayward. I think he's being paid in a nice spot. And then also, he's 30 years old now. And, you know, when this contract is up, he'll be around 34. But the thing is like, Gordon Hayward's game is not super dependent on athleticism. I think he'll always be able to do what he's able to do on the court for that contract period. And really what it all comes down to is, can he stay healthy? And that's a big if for Gordon Hayward, considering his recent history. But I'm hoping that he's able to stay healthy this year, especially, you know, since I drafted him to my fantasy team.
Yeah, there you go. same thing with the Gordon Hayward contract. You know, a lot of people criticized it, hated it, said they overpaid, or the Charlotte overpaid and whatnot. But I think that, again, you know, we kind of, or fans tend to look at things in a vacuum. Oh, he's getting $30 million a year. This player is not getting that much. He shouldn't be paid that much, blase. But, you know, you have to look at it from, you have to think of yourself in the position that Charlotte is in. First of all, when you talk about somebody's overpaid, you're essentially saying that, you know, that money could have went to somebody else better, or could have went to somebody else. When, okay, if you're the Charlotte Hornets, who else are you going to get? Like, nobody is really coming there. Like, it's really rare for them to get somebody even of Gordon Hayward's caliber to want to come there. So that's what you have to look at, number one. And then also, so basically, you're not going to lose out on anybody. Like, nobody's coming there over the next few years unless LaMelo turns into a star, right? And then, like, going back to my point earlier, it's easier for LaMelo to develop into a high-level player if he has an actual competent roster around him. And Gordon Hayward goes a long way towards giving him a competent roster, giving him a high-level playing vet that can help him get better, help him, you know, learn better habits and all that type of stuff. So having him at the Hornets, definitely, you know, even if it is a high price, it can definitely be worth it. Rather than, would you rather have LaMelo play alongside Nicholas Batum and Terry Rozier and Devontae Graham for the first 4 years of his NBA life? No, you want to give him, you know, somebody that can actually play. So I think from those standpoints, it was definitely, I don't think it was a bad signing at all for them. Now, obviously, he has to stay healthy, but, you know, that's always a risk.
Yeah. So that, you know, that kind of moves us into some of the other signings, some of the other things that happened. Of course, you know, Fred VanVleet, he got the bag, man. He stayed with Toronto for the extension. You know, I think this was a great move for Toronto. Definitely think it was a great move for VanVleet. You know, he stays with a franchise that knows his worth and he knows his role there. There's no questions about what he's supposed to be doing or how he's going to play or how he's going to be utilized. And Toronto keeps a guy committed to winning. You know, he shows that on the court time in and time out. So this is something that they'll do to continue to compete. And I think that, you know, of course, Fred VanVleet plays a little more off ball now with Kyle Lowry being there. But I also think that this signing was there to make sure that there's someone that you can basically take out of the mold of Kyle Lowry and put in Fred VanVleet. They do a lot of the same things. So, you know, I think this was a move that made a lot of sense for both sides.
Yeah. Shout out to Freddie VanVleet, man. He even said, he told us before free agency, he was trying to get the bag and he got it. So definitely happy for him. Yeah, he's obviously in a great spot in Toronto. And, you know, even with, you know, Lowry's getting up there in age, maybe they move on from him eventually, and Van Vliet can still be there and be the, you know, the premier point guard for the team. And so it's definitely, you know, good for him, good for Toronto. And, you know, Toronto is going to keep, you know, keep building. And I feel like they're in a spot now where they know they're going to be competent. So they have to, like, secure their future while also, you know, making sure that, you know, down the line they can make moves if they need to. And I think everything has been accomplished with that.
Indeed, man. Indeed. So, you know, we also saw a few of the shooters get paid this year. So Joe Harris and Davis Bertans. So I'm not as big of a fan on these signings specifically. Like, I know that shooting is a necessity in today's NBA. I just think there are some ways that you can find it for cheaper prices, but I don't think that these were bad signings by these teams given their situations. So, I mean, they're both getting paid about $15 to $20 million over the life of the contract. Just, you know, and that's each year. So both of them signed for about $70 to $80 million. Davis Bertans' contract is a little bit more palatable just because he's getting paid like in that lower range and Joe Harris is getting paid a little bit more. But it still doesn't seem crazy. Like, even though I wouldn't personally pay for shooters at that price margin, it's like, where are you going to go find a 42% three-point shooter just walking around? You know, just walking around. So it's almost like what you said. You know, the market is what the market is. This is what was there for them to be paid. And, you know, this was, I mean, for the Nets and for the Wizards, it was important to keep both of these players in the fold.
Yeah, I mean, it was important for them, but I just feel like, man, that's a lot of money going to
that's
them.
Where I'm at.
That's a lot of money. I mean, I like Davis Bertans, I had him on my fantasy team last year, and I see what he can do, but, man, it's just crazy to
– all they can do is shoot.
I don't know. It's a lot of money.
That's
a lot of money.
You know, all you can do is shoot. And it's like it makes me think, and this is why I'm saying I just think it can be found cheaper. So you look at a guy like Doug McDermott, who you can get at maybe a third of the cost, you know, overall. I mean, granted, he's not a free agent, but you can get a guy like that at a third of the cost, and he really does, you know, a lot of the same things, just in terms of being a high-level shooter. And, you know, maybe he's more of a, you know, maybe he's more of a liability on defense than these other two guys, but you know, the price tag seems a little high, but I do understand it. That's basically what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I get it, but I mean, like, even like Joe Harris, like, you're paying him that much money. I know he could shoot, but obviously you have KD and Kyrie coming back this year. You need somebody to space the floor, but for that much, and like, it's a lot. Like, now his role is actually decreasing from before when he signed the contract. So find somebody that could shoot on a lower price. Like, there's plenty of shooters today. I mean, but you know, it is what it is. Like I said, I understand. At the end of the day, you got to pay your guys. At the end of the day, so.
you kind of look at these guys like
it is a lot though.
Wayne Ellington. And I can just name shooters for a while, but like Luke Kennard, what could have been available. I mean, you just kind of have these guys that do a lot of the same things. They may not shoot it at
even Landry.
Yeah, Chan. Like you.
That's added Landry.
Exactly. Chan. It's just
and it's still
good. I don't see it. Yeah. I don't see it. But you know, it is what it is. It is what it is.
Yeah.
But one of the, you know, moving on to a brighter spot in the league is Portland. So finally, I feel like Portland has like that roster. Like I'm really high on Portland this year. I think, you know, what they did last year and, you know, bringing in Melo, taking some time to develop some of their younger pieces, I think that has a large impact to what they're going to be able to do this year. So first of all, with Portland, Nurkic is back, and I mean, if you watched any games in the bubble, you'll know that Jusuf Nurkić is definitely a force. He's nice, man. He has some great touch around the basket, and he's also able to extend his range out to the 3-point line, and he has great pick and roll chemistry with Damian Lillard. So that's the first piece there. But on top of that, they added Robert Covington, Derek Jones Jr. You know, Rocco and Derek Jones Jr. Melo got moved to the bench. Rodney Hood is coming back from injury. We saw what Gary Trent Jr. could do. We saw what Anthony Simons can do. And now Zach Collins can kind of grow into the role, which he probably deserves a little bit more in that bench role, backing up the 4 and 5 positions. So I am very bullish on Portland this year. I think this team is like really ready to take a step forward and snap, like snap through. They're like crazy, because like Terry Stotts is a great coach as well. And I just feel like if there was any iteration of a team that they could put together this year, this is like the perfect one. And, you know, I'm feeling really good about their outlook this year, and I'm hoping that they can make a deeper run into the playoffs.
Yeah, they're like a strong. Their rotation goes too deep at every spot, so it's like, yeah, you got Dame obviously, and you got what I guess Simons maybe backing him up. You got McCollum and Gary Trent, and Gary Trent had a great, what you call it, season, whatever, mm-hmm. especially in the bubble. We got Rocco. I don't know if Rocco is gonna start the 3 or the. Actually, I think they've been starting Derek Jones and Rocco together.
Then you have
Melo backing him up, Rodney Hood if he's healthy, Nurkić, and then Cantor, who had a great playoffs for them a couple. I
forgot
years
about
ago.
Cantor. So yeah.
Yeah. So they definitely got a strong roster, and you know, it's about, obviously they probably would have preferred to add a third star, maybe fourth, depending on how you value McCollum and Nurkić, but for what they had and what was available to them, this is about as good as they could have done this season, or this mm-hmm. offseason, excuse me. They definitely have a very strong roster. They added better or more defense. They've added, you know, obviously Rocco is a floor spacer. If Derek Jones develops in that area at all, that gets them that much better. They still have a couple young guys that probably could have improved, gotten to see a little. Anthony Simons, you know, he could have got better. Even Gary Trent. I forgot they picked up Harry Giles as well. They took a flyer on him. I mean, I don't expect much out of him, but they just have like kind of all their bases covered, basically, is what I'm trying to say. So I agree.
For sure.
I look forward to them having a strong season.
Right. And I think, you know, a large thing that they added in Derek Jones Jr. and Rocco was just that perimeter defense at the wing positions. I mean, or at the forward slots in general. You know, that's something that they were missing a lot of last year, and it's obviously something that held them back to a great degree. And just being able to guard from those spots and having that rim protection too, I think is going to go a long way in their sure. success. And I'm just, I mean, you know, Derek Jones Jr. coming from Miami and that environment, and you know, coming into Portland, you know, he's going to be focused. We know what Rocco brings. You know, Rocco is probably one of our favorite players, just in terms of what he's able to do on the floor defensively and being able to space the floor on defense. So, I'm sorry, on offense. But, yeah, I feel really good about Portland. You know, we'll see just how good I feel about them when we get into the predictions. But, you know, we'll see what happens there. So, you know, with – you know, the next thing, you know, we had a few changes with some big guys, some centers. So we had Montrezl Harrell to go from the Clippers to the Lakers. We had Serge Ibaka going from the Raptors to the Clippers. And then we had Dwight Howard going to Philly. So with these respective moves, I think that all of them were great destinations for each respective player. And I think they all go a long way to help their contending team with what they bring. So Trez to the Lakers, we already spoke about that. Serge Ibaka to the Clippers is huge. It gives them incredible flexibility with both the bench and starting positions. I'm still unsure about what they're going to do as far as Zubac is concerned, whether they're going to start him and bring him back off the bench. But regardless, Ibaka is going to jump right into the role that Montrezl Harrell had last year and actually magnify that a bit just because of the floor spacing that he can bring. And then Dwight Howard to Philly, you know, finally bringing in, you know, not someone to play next to Embiid, but finally bringing in someone that can actually back up Embiid and keep a strong, you know, a strong front court presence on the court at all times, you know, being able to have that rim protection at all times and actually spell Embiid, you know, whenever Embiid needs to rest or go out for any period of time in the game. So I feel that these three changes or these three moves specifically were just really great win-wins across the board for everyone.
Yeah, I think these are obviously three teams that, you know, expect to be contending next year or this year. And I think that, well, obviously we talked about Trez, but I really love the Ibaka and the Dwight signings. I guess Ibaka first, just because, you know, while you know, Trez was good for the Clippers, I think Ibaka fits their team much better. I know Trez's main, I guess Trez's main strengths were, you know, scoring and energy and things of that nature. Whereas Ibaka, you know, he's a better rim protector, number one, and he's a better shooter. He can space the floor. You know, the Clippers don't necessarily need, you know, Trez's scoring. You know, I guess if Trez is not scoring and, you know, hitting the offensive boards, then, you know, what else is he doing? So they don't really need his Trez's scoring just because, you know, you have Kawhi, you have PG, you have Lou Williams, you have plenty of people that can score. So Ibaka can fit in as a secondary piece to space the floor and protect the rim, which I think will make them better. And then you have Dwight to Philly, which you already mentioned. It's like the best backup that Embiid has had since he's been there. And, you know, he's been looking pretty good in preseason so far. And just from listening to the team talk and to the coaches talk, he's been really good about bringing the team together and doing what, you know, just fitting in and being that mentor to Embiid. He's talked about taking Embiid to the next level, which I really like. So I definitely love, you know, that signing for Philly as well. And then moving forward, we get to the team that nobody really had any idea what they were doing this offseason. That's the Detroit Pistons. man, I don't even know where to start with them. First of all,
we can start last year when they traded Andre Drummond for two packs of Skittles.
Oh yeah, we can talk about that. We can also talk about how their brightest spot or their brightest player from last year, Christian Wood, they basically let him go for nothing, and for whatever reason, they just let him go. then they seem to bring in any reclamation project that they could find. You know, I mean, more than Miles Plumlee, Jahlil Okafor. I can't even get into it. I won't hate on them this because it's my boy. They signed Jeremy Grant. They gave him a bag. No, he's going to be nice this year. I really can't. Can you make any sense of what these – it's not even like the fact that they bring in these people. It's like they're giving them real money. Like, okay, if you're going to bring in these people, do it over a short term and, you know, you can reset or whatever. But I just don't understand.
First of all, and you said it, but seriously, like, why in the world would you let Christian Wood just walk – after you're the team that discovered him, like you had every opportunity to keep him there. He was snapping last year and he wanted to stay in Detroit. He's actually made comments about, you know, him saying like, I don't want to leave. So like that made absolutely no sense. But I think Detroit is okay if we're talking about the future. Just for a few reasons. So it's
okay in what sense?
Okay, in terms of they may have some path, right? That you can actually envision, because after the Drummond trade, to me, they had no path whatsoever. So I think they have some sort of path, even though, even if you want to, like, obviously I'm going to be reaching a little bit for this here. So they have some future pieces. They drafted Killian Hayes, who's an international player. He comes in to play point guard. They're hoping that he's the point guard of the future. They have another intriguing player in Sekou Doumbouya, who got some energy, some rotation, showed some energy last year, towards the end of the season. And I think that he is going to, you know, once Blake continues to break down here, I think he's going to be the person that's stepping forward and playing in that four position. So I think the thing that I'm most intrigued with is seeing how Jeremy Grant plays as more of the main option. And I know, like, he's not the main option, but he's definitely one of the top options there on offense. And the reason that I'm thinking that they'll be okay in terms of the future aspect of this is if they bring in another guy. Right now, like, Delon Wright is taking that off-guard position. They still have Derrick Rose off the bench. Blake is there. Like you said, a bunch of, like, nonsense happening at the center position. But if they get some guys here next year, either free agency or the draft, Jeremy Grant can Nobody's slide going into there. No, they're not. Not free agency. Let me just say the draft. Jeremy Grant can slide into, like, more of a complementary offensive role and being that ace defender. And I think that's really why Detroit got him there. I think that it's more so about his defensive ability and being able to guard, like, any forward in the league in the future. I'm hoping that's what they had in mind. I don't think that Jeremy Grant is going to, you know, come out here and average 20. Like, let's just keep it a little realistic. I don't see it, man. I don't see it. So we'll see how it goes, but I don't see it. But, you know, basically Detroit, I mean, Delon Wright is going to take a step forward, I think. But Detroit is going to need some time before we really see what it is that they're doing. And they need to stop having this, like, huge misappropriation of assets. Like, you should have gotten way more for Andre Drummond. You should have never let Christian Wood just walk away from your franchise after he had just a clear abruption, clear eruption to the end of the season last year. Like, that, it just doesn't make sense. So I'll say that I have some very cautious optimism for Detroit finding their way over the next couple of years. But as of this season, they're floundering.
I have none. I have none. But I guess the one final thing that I would look at, too, is I wonder if I wonder if Blake Griffin becomes a trade candidate now, you know.
Well,
like, where does he
– Who's going
to
trade?
I don't know. But they show they're not afraid to trade players for nothing, so you never know. Blake seems to, you know, enjoy Detroit somewhat, but I just don't see how. I don't know. Blake is just in a weird spot, you know. He's obviously been fighting injuries and all that, and being in Detroit and things of that nature. So you just feel like Blake isn't going to last long on this team, but I can't say where he's going to go.
Do you mind can I just go off on a tangent for a moment here?
Like, go ahead.
I just feel really bad for Blake. Like, Blake is actually, like, if you look at Blake's, like, Blake is actually a really good player. If he didn't play for the Clippers and the Pistons, I just think his career would have gone so much differently. And like, granted, when he was with the Clippers, he had some things going for him. You know, they had some upsets and some disappointments in the playoffs. But he couldn't have been traded to a worse place than Detroit.
Right.
I mean, that's kind of where I'm like, I feel bad for Blake, because I of course he's been hindered by injuries his entire career. But
especially
Blake
after the Clippers told him he was the man and all that. That was just,
exactly the way it happened. Like, you know, everything that's gone on with Blake, man, I just think that Blake is a real he's a really good player. Like, even though he doesn't provide any rim protection, he does some things from the power forward position that you don't see from anyone else across the league, with his blend of playmaking, now shooting, you know, and his ability to finish too. So I hope that he does get traded, and I hope that he gets traded to a place that that will really do some good things for his ending his career. I'm hoping that he gets some type of bright light, you know, shown there. So that's my tangent, though. Just a little feeling a little bad for Blake there.
Yeah, for sure. And then I guess the final thing that we wanted to talk about real quickly, I guess, because we kind of talked about it a little bit already, but the small ball experiment in Houston is officially over now. You know, with they've obviously signed Christian Wood, which you talked about, and also signed Boogie Cousins, and, you know, and reunited him with John Wall, the two Kentucky teammates. So I guess going forward for Houston, how do you see, I guess, first of all, how do you see Boogie and Christian Wood coexisting? And also just them two also teamed up with Wall and Harden. It seems like there's a lot of, I don't know. It's like on paper it sounds good, but it's also like weird at the same time.
Man, Harden better get his act together, because this is the best supporting cast he has ever had, and he needs to like wake up. He needs to wake up and realize that you have. And granted, I understand that Boogie's health is a big thing, but Boogie has looked really good.
And Wall,
really
Wall.
Good. Yes, Wall has looked really good. But I'm speaking about Boogie.
Health too, but
yes. But Boogie and Wood specifically is like the holy grail of bigs, right? So you have two, and this is like a little bit more of what I was talking about Phoenix. So no, this is I'm not talking about the holy grail as in players. I'm just talking about skill set, right? So they can both protect the rim and space the floor. So you get the rim protection without having to give up anything on the offensive end. And that's what I'm talking about. I'm not saying like that they're two, like these two players are the holy grail. Sorry. So but no, like if Boogie stays healthy, if he continues to protect the rim, you know, continues to be the player that he is and continues to shoot well from three, and Christian Wood does the same, you know, this does give Harden a complexity on the team that he's never had before. And with John Wall being there, I mean, John Wall has said a lot. He made a lot of comments on, you know, practicing shooting and making sure that he's a better shooter from the perimeter. And he certainly hasn't been shy by any means putting up those three-point shots in the preseason. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Houston, albeit, you know, there's definitely some mystery there. There's some big, you know, reclamation projects here, a lot of uncertainty, if you may. I think if everything comes together for Houston, they could be really strong, and they could be really scary too, just because there aren't a lot of teams that can easily match up with them. They have a lot of talent there. Like, you know, if we rewind 4 years, I don't think we would easily find a way for Harden, Boogie, and John Wall to end up on the same team. So it's definitely a great opportunity for Houston. I'm just hoping that, you know, all of the trade rumors and everything that is going on, and then health, of course, isn't something that derails this team from being all they can be.
Yeah, I mean, I can't really argue against anything you said. I'm going to just say one thing. What a situation for a first-time head coach to be Steven Silas. Like, he just
seriously,
obviously the trade rumors and all that, and then obviously he has, you know, how do you fit Wall and Harden and then Boogie and Christian Wood, and there's a lot of stuff for a first-year head coach to figure out. So, you know,
there are some huge personalities there too.
Exactly. Like, that's the big thing as well.
Yeah, that's a good point to make. That's going to be interesting. So, you know, in terms of just like what's next in the NBA season, what we're going to be talking about, of course, we're going to get the predictions for what we think, you know, award-wise and just season-wise, and how that's going to play off just early in the season to show, you know, how great we are predicting how well teams are going to do. But you know, what do you think, WAP, about, you know, just kind of you know, the NBA season at large. You know, of course, we haven't discussed COVID at all and the impact that it's going to have this year. I know a lot of teams from what I've seen aren't playing, but it's the preseason. They aren't playing with fans in their arenas. I do have some concerns surrounding just the closer proximity of a fan to player that the NBA has, you know, in opposition than, you know, what the NFL may do, something like that. But, you know, I know that there's a large focus, I'm sure, from the NBA board to start bringing in some revenue, you know, some more revenue into these teams. So what are your thoughts on just the season at large, you know, COVID's impact on it? And then, you know, these are things that we'll talk about fluidly, but wanted to kind of get your initial thoughts on that.
Yeah, well, I guess first of all, I would hope that, you know, the NBA would be smart enough to, like, not put fans on the first rows or whatever, have them move back a little bit, and away from the tunnels and things of that nature. And then also, yeah, just talking about COVID, first, I just want to, I don't think we got the chance to mention, like, how much of a success the bubble was. Like, that was an amazing production, and yes, that was definitely great. great experience for NBA basketball and playoff basketball. But going into the new season, it's obviously going to be different. You know, it'll be interesting to see teams like Philly that really feed off of their home, that has one of the best home crowds of the league, how their play differs. And also, obviously, you know, people aren't in isolation anymore. So, I mean, obviously, at some point, somebody's going to get the virus. So how do they respond to that? How do they manage that? How do they make sure that multiple players and coaches and staff aren't affected? And then beyond all the COVID stuff, which I hope goes well, I'm really looking forward to, it's just going to be another unique season. You know, no bubble this year, but okay, it's a shortened season, 72 games. Then you have, they had changed the format a little bit for the playoffs with the play-in tournaments. And so I think the Raptors are playing in Tampa Bay. Like, there's so many things that are going to be unique about this season. I'm excited to see how that all plays out.
Indeed, indeed. So, you know, with that said, you know, we'll definitely catch you guys on the next episode where we're going to give our predictions, talk a little bit more about, you know, the season at large and, you know, what we expect to happen. But, you know, be sure to tune in. You know, we'll be talking, you know, pretty consistently, you know, over the weeks here, you know, keeping you informed about the NBA and what's going on. But yes, you know, other than that, you know, tune in to Cannon and Wop on Instagram and Twitter. You know, we're going to keep you posted on everything happening in the league, you know, all of the highlights and all the signings and breaking news, things like that. And, you know, stay posted here on the podcast. Again, appreciate you guys for tuning in. And Cannon out.
Wop out.